photographer's desk. Delighted with the acknowledgement of his new trade skill and the fact that there was something other than books to look at in the library, Kaz immediately plopped down and went to work testing it out. Minutes later, the grinning Thurser handed Rorik a detailed map of the lower floors of the Citadel. It contained only the passages and rooms they'd been through or seen inside on their way to the Dungeon Lord, but it was a brilliant start. Those maps would undoubtedly come in handy when it was time to take on Azabek and his cronies, especially if they could fill the rest of the levels in. After the library, they toured the new, smaller antechamber at the bottom of the crumbling staircase from the Bailey, where the heroes could either stick together and pick a direction, or split up and follow both corridors, one to the library and the other to the Great Room. Rorik took them through the Great Room, describing the attack formations he wanted to teach the changelings and reaver bats once they respawned. Zira seemed skeptical that he could convince a large group of trolls used to fighting one another to trust one another long enough to band together, but Kaz was emphatic that it would work.
Kaz will explain to them that he was a changeling too once, but now he is a mighty Thurser because he worked together with Rorik, Kaz said, his voice cheery with optimism. Every changeling wants to become mighty. They will work together for that.
While Kaz spoke, Rorik led them down the final stretch of unexplored corridor. When they came out in the kitchen, the mighty Thurser fell silent. A fire burned cheerfully in an enormous hearth, complete with a spit large enough to roast a bison whole. Just outside, a thick iron arm with a hook on the end waited for a pot to be hung on it. Nearby sat a heavy, scrubbed oak table with an assortment of knives stuck in a butcher block. Pots and pans and dried herbs hung along one wall over a set of low shelves and a series of bins, barrels, and sacks for storing ingredients. Slowly, dazedly, Kaz shuffled through the room, touching things with the very tips of his huge, calloused fingers, as if he were wandering through a waking dream or some sort of holy place.
Salt,
he whispered, dragging his claws through the sack full of white crystals in awe. He lifted up a handful and watched it run through his fingers.
So much salt.
Then with a speed that belied his huge body, Kaz shot across the kitchen and crushed Rorik's tiny bird-like torso in his tree-trunk arms. Loud, wet sobs racked the mighty Thurser as he shouted nearly incoherent expressions of thanks directly into Rorik's ear and made promises of glorious stews, succulent roasted meats, and endless parades of spices, all enhanced with the wonder of salt. When the storm of gratitude finally calmed enough for Rorik to extricate himself, he patted the teary-eyed Thurser on the back and brushed away the wetness Kaz had left behind from his leather armor. Kaz's reaction alone had been well worth the few traps he'd had to give up to purchase the kitchen.
"Kaz will begin cooking immediately,"
the Thurser declared, puffing out his chest, back straight, hands planted on his hips.
"Zira has never eaten food before, and Kaz is starving. Rorik must be hungry, too. Kaz will cook a meal to grief an army on."
The hollow gnawing in Rorik's stomach agreed that a meal wouldn't go amiss. A quick check told him that they still had a little more than an hour before the slaughtered creatures began respawning.
"You do that," Rorik said. "Macaroni and I are going to the smithy to start turning out weapons. Zira,
traps,"
she said. "Exactly. We'll meet back here in an hour to fill our guts. Then we'll begin training the troops."
Chapter 26, Hammer and Steel. The forge was bursting with heat by the time Rorik returned. Macaroni chirped happily at the temperature change and immediately curled up along the stone side of the open forge next to the bellows. Not blessed with cold blood like the salamander, Rorik stripped off his leather armor and set to inspecting the equipment scattered around the sweltering chamber as a sheen of sweat broke out across his brow, chest, and back. Off the far wall was a small coal closet filled to the ceiling with porous gray clumps of foundry coke, a dust-covered scoop shovel stuck down in the pile. Nearby lay a workbench with a heavy vise set into the end. A set of shelves on the adjacent wall held a small pile of iron and steel ingots, some leather strips, iron ore, and an assortment of punches, swages, rasps, clamps, dies, as well as every weight, shape, and size combination of hammers and tongs a smith could need. A quenching trough stretched along the wall closest to the forge, angled down to a grated drain in the floor. The trough must have been fed by an underground spring, as a steady trickle poured out of the lowest end of the trough into the drain, adding the quiet burble of running water to the crackle of the flames. Beside it was a pedaled grindstone, rough and unused, and an empty storage chest. A leather tanning rack and a wooden enchanter's table in the far corner both seemed out of place, but Rorik was glad to have them. Intrigued, he studied the enchanter's table. Its face glowed with blue and green arcane sigils and hummed with magical energy. The table's slim top, coiling vine-like legs and spidery supports, looked delicate enough to burn up in this atmosphere of fire and slag. Eventually, he would need to inspect the workstation more closely, but for now, he had to get working on the essentials. Enchanting would come later, once he had the time and resources for it. He turned away from the spindly-legged table and focused on the real jewel of the room, the anvil. Nothing in the smithy could have been dismissed as cheap or second-rate, but the anvil at the center of the room nearly stole Rorik's breath away. A double-horned mass of solid forged steel, it came complete with both a square hardy hole and round pritchel hole, and even had a block on the back side for upsetting. He ran his palm over its perfect gritty face. The only place he'd encountered an anvil that nice before had been in Berthora's mage smithy, and that old bag had tanned his hide the one time she caught him touching it. He'd been confined to the wrought iron apprentice's anvil with a scarred and battered steel plate that disfigured as many projects as it completed, because she didn't want him chasing your trash work and disfiguring my Selby. Rorik might not have been in love enough to name his anvil, but he did have a hard time tearing himself away from it and going to the forge. A quick check showed him the fire needed to be built up to reach the optimum temperature to work metal efficiently. He added a shovelful of coke from the closet, then set to work pumping the bellows. When the coals reached that perfect shade of red, Rorik brought over an ingot from the shelf with a pair of tongs and stuck it into the center. A page of text appeared with a list of metals. When he focused on iron, a new page opened, listing the different pieces he could make. Rorik selected the simplest, dagger, hoping to start with something basic to get a feel for smithing in Hearthworld. You do not have the proper materials to create an iron dagger. To create an iron dagger, you need 1 iron ingot, 2 leather strips, and 2 iron rivets. Materials for blacksmithing can be found around Hearthworld or obtained by destroying items. Interesting. Though he knew he could knock out a handful of rivets in a few minutes, Rorik opened his inventory and searched until he found one of the smaller axes he'd taken off the griefed heroes. The option to improve or destroy the shoddy iron war axe appeared. Rorik selected destroy. Warning, destroying items results in a small amount of materials lost to waste. Therefore, destroyed items cannot be reforged as they were without the addition of more material. Are you sure you want to destroy this shoddy iron war axe, yes or no? When he selected yes, the sound of metal tossed onto a scrap pile rang through the forge. A list of components appeared on the page before him. Shoddy iron war axe yielded 1 iron ingot, 2 leather strips, 1 rivet, and 1 stick of wood. Encouraged by the gain, Rorik destroyed the axe's twin. Then a longsword he was never going to use, watching the materials on the page grow in response. This was certainly faster and easier than deconstructing pieces back in his homeworld. He destroyed a cracked wood bow that looked as if it had been waiting to be taken apart for years, then returned his attention to creating. He stoked the coals back up to temperature and heated the iron once more, bringing it off when it glowed just the right shade of red. The water in the trough hissed as he quenched the glowing metal. He selected a peening hammer and went to work drawing the iron out. When it cooled too much, he started the process over again. The dagger began to take shape, and soon he was lost in the lovely toil and grind of smithing. Writing spells had been Rorik's destiny from birth. It was the responsibility of the nobles of Traben to make out writs that sent the souls of the recently deceased onto paradise, seal graves against necromancy, and protect their people and holdings from plagues, raids, and invaders. But smithing was his love. Unlike the merciless paper and pen, metal was a forgiving medium. He didn't have to worry about a misplaced comma taking his head off, or a wrong word killing or crippling an innocent bystander. If he made a mistake while smithing, he could just melt it down and begin again. It was humble, grueling toil that ended in a functional product, and the intensity of the labor was like a scouring for the cluttered head. When the sweat started pouring and his muscles started aching, everything else disappeared. He could throw his mind and body into the work, driving away every worry or distraction with the ringing chant of the hammer and the incense of burning coke and red-hot iron. Years after Bluderich Nacht stole away the only family Rorik had known, stepping inside a smithy felt like coming home. Rorik destroyed every weapon and bit of armor in his inventory that he couldn't or wouldn't use, except for the lash of the waning blood moon, which Azabek's blessing wouldn't allow to be destroyed, and made a variety of daggers, a handful of maces and axes, some pole arms, and even a few crude bows and arrows, along with several suits of plate armor. The crafting went a lot faster in Hearthworld than it had back home, taking minutes instead of hours, and he only got faster the longer he worked. His blacksmithing leveled up twice, allowing him to create steel and obsidian weapons and armor and improve average items to quality. As he dismissed the notices and returned to work, he thought idly that he needed to find a hero with some obsidian weapons and armor to experiment with. He'd never smithed obsidian before. By the time he ran out of reclaimed materials, he had enough weapons to arm each of the trolls on the first floor. Rorik turned to the steel ingots on the shelf and began the torturously slow process of creating ringmail armor. He'd left that until last because he knew the tiny interlocking links would be hardest to form and require the sharpest focus and most patience, and he hadn't wanted to run out of time to make weapons. The first shirt of quality steel ringmail leveled up his blacksmithing again, and the notice included an addendum that he could now create fulgurite weapons and armor and improve quality items to superior. He lost track of time on the next few shirts and flinched when another notice popped up shouting congratulations on leveling up his smithing yet again. Once the ironwork was done, he ambled over to the leatherworking station, plopped down on a three-legged stool, and began sorting through the leather tools. Skiving knife, punch tool, edge beveler, edge creaser, sewing roulette, finger cots, and stitching awls. Rorik had never done much leatherwork back home, but the knowledge he'd gleaned from the tailoring trade skill made the items instantly familiar. He didn't have much raw leather, but he set to work all the same, carefully crafting several pairs of shoddy leather boots, which brought his tailoring up to level 2. Finally, Rorik stood up and stretched the stiffness out of his back and neck. He had less than 20 minutes left before the slaughtered creatures started respawning. It was time to shift focus from creating to improving what he'd already made. The work took him back and forth between the grindstone and the workbench, and he was practically running by the end of it. His tireless effort paid off, however, and he managed to upgrade the last set of shoddy leather boots to superior just as the first changeling respawned. Strangely enough, as the creatures began to reappear throughout the level, a new option appeared on the character page of his Mystic Grimoire. Current Worldstone Authority, Lesser Vassal, 0 of 55. Use Mass Soul Forge, yes or no? The Worldstone must have somehow connected with his position as overseer of the first floor, making it possible to create lesser vassals out of all the creatures under his command. How advanced would they be if he imbued them all with life and will? Perhaps not as aware as Kaz or Zira, but their combined intelligence would pose a formidable threat to the invading heroes, without a doubt. Had Merrick Konig Ustar thought the same thing the first time he'd used the stone on his own vassals? Rorik scowled. He'd already created one greater vassal without giving him a choice, and though Kaz seemed happier for it, knowing that he shared any action in common with the Tyrant King turned Rorik's stomach. No. The creatures of the Citadel had been oppressed long enough. He wouldn't cut down one dictatorship just to give them another under his name. He would let them choose whether they wanted to become his lesser vassals. Rorik stashed everything he'd made in the heavy-lidded storage chest, then bolted back through the corridors, Macaroni's sticky feet slapping along behind him. Outside the hellish atmosphere of the forge, the layer of sweat on his body turned ice cold in seconds. He was nearly shivering by the time he made it back to the kitchen. Kaz and Zira were already sitting at the blocky, rough-topped table, eating. The Thurser held a huge bowl in both hands, drinking stew from it, his face a study in ecstasy. Zira, meanwhile, tore chunks of bread off a crusty loaf and dipped them into her stew, making the sodden chunks disappear into the depths of her hood.
"Smelling good, Griefer," she said, the ironic tone of her voice stopping just shy of outright mockery.
"Says the woman who stinks like she spent the last hour juggling decomposing heads," Rorik countered.
"Troll, not woman," she corrected him, tossing back another chunk of dripping bread. "And I did. That should give you an idea of how badly you need a bath."
"It'll have to be later."
Rorik took the proffered bowl of stew from Kaz and gulped down half the broth before coming up for air. It was as delicious as any stew he'd ever had back in Traben, savory with a touch of pepper, and its warmth staved off the sweat shivers.
"As soon as everyone's respawned, I want to meet with them in the Great Hall and go over the strategy. Make something of a proposal."
He popped a chunk of meat into his mouth and chewed, relishing the tender gaminess. He looked up at Kaz.
"This is even better than what that woman served us at the marketplace."
Kaz grinned, his chest puffing up with pride.
"Kaz only used a little salt this time. Much better than Kaz's first batch."
"You made two pots?" Rorik asked.
Kaz shuddered at the memory, then seemed to remember his dignity and straightened up to his full height.
"Salt is very good, but a cook shouldn't use more than a handful per pot," the Thurser said sagely.
Rorik looked from Kaz's shovel-sized hands to Zira. Her hood nodded in response to his unasked question.
"I thought he'd poisoned me."
"Kaz would never," the Thurser gasped.
"I know that now," Zira said, tearing off another bite of bread and dipping it in her stew.
Rorik cocked his eyebrow, imagining how well that had played out.
"Just tell me you didn't poison him back."
"I gave him the antidote once we'd cleared up all the misunderstandings."
The Reaver popped the chunk of bread into her hood, then twisted in her seat to face Kaz.
"Anyway, I'm glad you convinced me to try the second batch, big guy. Turns out this eating thing is pretty great."
Chapter 27. Fresh Meat. After the three of them had finished off the pot of stew, with some very enthusiastic help from Macaroni, Rorik sent Kaz and Zira to the forge to gather the weapons and armor from the storage chest. Meanwhile, Rorik returned to the throne room and used the Overseer's troop management page to contact all the respawned creatures on the first floor at the same time, a sort of mass telepathy. With it, he instructed the lot of them to assemble in the Great Hall. The majority had already arrived by the time Rorik made it to the Great Hall, though a handful were still trickling in. A small colony of Reaver bats darted in from the corridor that led to the new antechamber and found a place to hang near the obsidian chandelier. Shadows and distortions wandered the walls and ceiling, occasionally shooting a sticky, invisible tongue out and snatching crunchy insects from between the stones. The changelings and thursers gathered around the rough-hewn tables, grumbling at one another from outside claws' reach and swilling ale from dented flagons and ancient-looking wineskins. Rorik found Zira and Kaz at the front of the hall and gave them a quick rundown of what he hoped to accomplish over the next few hours. Sometime between defeating Ugaraz and surviving the meeting with the Dungeon Lord, Kaz seemed to have become supremely optimistic about everything Rorik did. He thought Rorik's plan was flawless and could only lead to wonderful new things for the good of all. Zira withheld comment, but with a doubtful perusal of the chamber that was deafening. For his part, Rorik thought it most likely that the whole operation would fall somewhere between those poles. Not an outright disaster, but not all tarts and rainbows either. When the final Thursar arrived, Rorik banged an empty flagon on the head table until the dull roar of grumbling, growling, and movement filling the great hall stopped and all eyes turned to study him. Well, they tried to study him. Unfortunately, many of those seated at the tables or milling about the room couldn't see the tiny changeling overseer, even when they stretched and craned their necks. Rorik stepped up on the table, and the straining stopped.
"By now you're all aware that Ugaraz the Vile is dead, and I'm the new floor overseer," Rorik said. "In addition to this, many of you may think that it's because of this that the heroes came through and wiped you out earlier. That's true, but it's not the whole truth. You see, the heroes who slaughtered you did so because they have been conditioned for years to believe that the natural order is for them to kill and for us to lie down and die like spineless curs. And likewise, you lot have been conditioned into accepting that dismal fate as inevitable. I, however, disagree, and Pona Bona 007 and his party are bent on destroying this floor because I fought back, because I resisted this supposed natural order."
A Thursar at one of the long tables shouted,
"I heard it's 'cause you griefed them and looted the body."
"Of course I griefed them," Rorik snapped. "It's the most efficient strategy for leveling up, and looting gave me the weapons and armor to accomplish it. The idea that we're not allowed to take the spoils of victory for our own defense or use common sense to gain levels is absurd. Ugaraz might have encouraged ridiculous taboos and stirred up infighting, but not me. I don't want you to stay weak. I want each of you to become a force to be reckoned with. We're the first line of defense in the Citadel, the hardest hit every time a band of heroes attacks, and we can use that to our advantage. Working together instead of fighting alone and unorganized, we can overwhelm and defeat our enemy. The more heroes we kill, the more each of you levels up." "At first, that will enrage them," Rorik continued, his voice growing in certainty and conviction. "They're so used to opposing no threat that the moment we make a serious effort to survive, they'll see it as going against the natural order and try to stomp us out. Good, I say. Let them come back 100 times over, angrier and bloodthirstier than before. We'll kill them all again and level up 100 times in the process."
Around the great hall, leathery blue, brown, black, and granite-colored faces had started to shine with a tentative hope. Many more, however, showed fear or skepticism.
"Most of you believe that the only way of life in this Citadel is fighting the heroes in the front while you watch for the friendly fire at your back," Rorik said, glancing sidelong at Zira. "That's the way things have always been done. But cutting one another down doesn't make anybody stronger. It weakens all of us, making us easier prey for the raiders. Where I'm from, we have a saying. A rising tide lifts all boats. It means the stronger the troll fighting next to you, the more likely you are to survive. And not only survive, but win. Thrive." Rorik nodded down at Kaz. "My friend here told me once that every changeling dreams of becoming mighty. I know he's right, because I dream of that too. Working together, he and I have griefed multiple heroes, leveled up 6 times, even taken control of the first floor. And that's just 2 of us. Imagine what kind of havoc every creature in this room could wreak if we worked together. Imagine evolution. Becoming mighty won't be an impossible dream anymore. It will only be a matter of time."
They were coming around. Most of the changelings in the room had faraway, wistful looks in their eyes as they visualized growing into something bigger, stronger, and faster. The bats and salamanders were harder to read, but they seemed to be leaning in, waiting for him to explain how to accomplish this miracle.
"I'm not going to force any of this on you," Rorik said, folding his hands behind his back. "I might be the floor overseer now, but I'm not a tyrant. If you want to be a part of this, to learn to fight together, then you can join me and become one of my vassals. If you choose not to,
You can remain on the first floor and fight alone until you've leveled up enough to migrate downstairs. It's your choice. He paused, jaw tightening as he eyed each group of creatures in turn. But be warned, no sabotage will be tolerated on my floor. You need not work with me, but you will not work against me. Not here. He spread out his hands. Rorik allowed the words to hang in the air like a thundercloud threatening to unleash a lightning storm. All over, eyes stared into the middle distance, some moving slowly from left to right, as if reading invisible lines of text. Several mouths moved in time, sounding out words Rorik couldn't see. Near the front, a wiry changeling clenching a dented flagon said,
Yes!
Splint has accepted your invitation to become a lesser vassal. Current Worldstone Authority, lesser vassal, 1 of 55.
Yes!
Another said as he dragged a sharp little claw across the wood surface of a table, marring the grain. Zerk has accepted your invitation to become a lesser vassal. Current Worldstone Authority, lesser vassal, 2 of 55. More and more trolls echoed their acceptance. From above, and both sides as well, came a chorus of squeaks and chirps as the reaver bats and stone salamanders joined in. Rorik's Worldstone Authority filled like a pitcher plunged underwater until nearly every creature on the first floor had become a lesser vassal. 2 of the thursars and a level 6 elite reaver bat with a small colony of level 1s in tow chose to reject the Soul Forge. The pair of thursars, both level 5s, departed at once to try their luck on the second floor, while the elite reaver bat and its colony flew off to whichever ceiling they normally occupied. In truth, Rorik was relieved to let them go. It was visible proof that he wasn't a tyrannical dictator who would crush anyone who disagreed to dust. And not just proof for everyone around him, but also himself. Even without them, the group who had become lesser vassals was still a much higher percentage than he'd ever seen converted to the resistance in Traben in one go. All around the Great Hall, Rorik saw faces hungry for evolution, ready for a change, and willing to put in the work to make it happen.
It's going to take training and practice to get the hang of fighting together, Rorik told them. It's also going to take equipment beyond loincloths and claws.
He pulled out his slim rapier and gave the gleaming weapon a flourish that brought a muted wave of oohs and ahs from the assembled creatures.
To that end, the first order of business is getting you outfitted. Kaz will hand over your armor, and Zira will give you your weapon. Everyone get equipped, then we'll start with some basics.
The next 20 minutes were a chaotic scramble to convince angry changelings that there was no shortage of weapons and armor, and even if they weren't the first in line, they would receive equipment. 5 fights broke out, 2 of them particularly vicious, but no one was killed, which Rorik counted a triumph, even if a small one. Progress was progress, after all. Just minutes after the last changeling had received his crude iron mace, a loud voice cut through the great hall.
Holy balls, Jace, look at this! Those douchebags are telling the truth!
A pair of heroes, both level 4, stood in the doorway to the crumbling staircase, one an olm in shiny plate mail, the other a human in wooden Orogiri armor.
Perfect timing, Rorik said.
It was time for a little demonstration of what exactly teamwork could accomplish. He pulled his rapier and nodded at Kaz. With a furious war cry, Kaz charged the heroes head-on, hacking and slicing with his twin hooked swords. Meanwhile, Rorik darted in from the side and back, cutting their health down and distracting whichever one Kaz wasn't fighting at the moment, so that neither of the heroes got an opportunity to attack while the Thursar's broad back was turned. They made short work of the pair, and Rorik made certain that Kaz struck both killing blows. As the two heroes died, an ascending chime rang through the great hall, and Kaz's flesh glowed with golden light. He had leveled up. Another low ooh rumbled through the newly minted lesser vassals.
As you can see, even just having one partner along to protect your back is a major advantage,
Rorik addressed the lot of them.
Grab a partner, and we'll go over some quick strategies for working in pairs. In no time at all, we'll have you butchering these so-called heroes just as efficiently as Kaz and I.
Over the next few hours, Rorik took them through partner drills, then split them into groups of three and four and added stone salamanders and reaver bats to the teams to work on more complicated concepts. Rorik, Kaz, and Zero wandered through the Great Hall, giving tips on weapon usage, suggesting roles within groups based on individual strengths, and breaking up the occasional fight. The vassals picked up fighting together quickly, with only a few mishaps and one attempted assassination, which might have just been an ingrained reaction to turning around and finding another changeling close by with a dagger in hand. All in all, things were going better than Rorik had dared to hope. While they were training, small bands of heroes trickled in. Several of the parties didn't seem to be there to raid at all, but to affirm rumors flying around Hearthworld that the trolls of the cruel citadel were acting strange. Very strange. Rorik kept a strict rotation going, making sure that each new band of heroes that appeared was taken down by a different fighting group. In this way, they all got a taste of real-world combat, and the experience and loot were spread evenly throughout the militia in training. Rorik only stepped in himself when it looked as if one of his vassals was going to be killed before a comrade came to their aid. He couldn't build a formidable army if he was forever waiting for its warriors to respawn. After a time, the haphazard groups began to coalesce into well-organized fighting machines, and the leveling up started in earnest, filling the Great Hall with sporadic whoops of celebration. Even Macaroni gained a level when he nearly bit the head off a battle-axe-wielding Rog with one mighty snap of his jaws. With a flash of emerald light, the bloodthirsty little beast doubled in size, becoming an elite stone salamander, and according to his character page, gained the venomous fang ability. Rorik sorely wished he could pull up Mac's evolutionary tree just to see what was in store, but that seemed beyond his abilities at the moment. Satisfied that his lesser vassals had a fair grasp of fighting together, Rorik explained the new layout of the first floor and its many pitfalls for unsuspecting heroes. They then spread out through the corridors and rooms and worked on utilizing the traps he, Kaz, and Zira had so painstakingly set up in preparation for the onslaught, which was sure to come. By late that night, they had stationed groups in strategic places throughout the first floor, leaving the newly armed and trained troops to take out the slow seep of heroes who were still trickling through. Rorik and Zira headed back to the library to talk strategy while searching the new tomes for trade skill books, but Kaz begged off, unable to stand another minute away from his beloved kitchen.
"There is so much for Kaz to cook," the Thurser said, a wistful expression clouding his features. "So many kinds of food to make."
"You can do anything you like, mate," Rorik said. "You don't need my permission. This is your life now."
Kaz's eyes went starry and wet, but thankfully he managed not to burst into tears.
"Kaz may not have to ask permission to do what he likes," he croaked hoarsely. "But if Kaz was going to ask permission of anyone, he would be most proud to ask it of Rorik."
Chapter 28, Backstab. The quiet of the library settled in around Rorik like a feather tick mattress, soothing away the aches and pains of hard labor and training as he and Zira sifted through the shelves of new books, and Macaroni napped on the ceiling overhead in apparent defiance of gravity with his new size. Rorik was exhausted, mentally and physically drained, but pleased with the results of the day's work. As far as he was concerned, there was no better end to a day like that than to immerse himself in words. Now and again, however, he found his gaze creeping away from the texts, back to the Reaver's shadowy hood and the spill of white ringlets tumbling out of it. "What?" she asked finally, without looking up from the board book of Rog verse she was reading. Telling her the truth, that he was fascinated by the contrast of her white hair on the midnight blue of her skin, and curious what the face she kept hidden from the world looked like, was out of the question. Better a good-natured needling. Rorik shrugged his uneven changeling shoulders.
"Just thinking how, to the untrained eye, it might look like a certain assassin was wrong about getting trolls to work together rather than sabotaging one another."
"If you're looking for an apology,
The smartest thing to do would be to hold your breath and wait, she said, turning one thin wooden page.
With a chuckle, Rorik went back to reading the magical properties of the trees of Hearthworld. He'd nearly finished the chapter when she spoke up again.
Why didn't you execute the thursars and bats who refused to join you?
His face twisted in disgust.
I'm not a tyrant. They'll see it as weakness, she said, voice filled with steadfast certainty.
Clearly this was a woman, no, a troll, he reminded himself, who had tasted the sting of betrayal cruelly and often.
He'd met plenty of resistance fighters who'd been like her, pessimistic, sour, and certain the change was impossible, even though they fought on all the same.
It was that same attitude which permeated the rebel council, the same attitude which prevented them from taking the bold action required to seize victory.
And chances are at least one of them will come back later to kill you, she finished softly.
Rorik closed the leather-bound volume on his forefinger and stared down at the cover while he considered the best way to answer.
I knew of a soldier once who'd been a part of a massacre in a small village, he said after a moment. They were supposed to raise it to the ground in retaliation for hiding a fugitive from a tyrant. In the midst of this attack, while his comrades were hewing down farmers, women and children like trees, the soldier came across a tiny, golden-haired girl hiding under a table and scared out of her wits. He saw her there, clutching a corn-husk doll to her stomach, and though his orders were to kill every living thing in the village, and he'd already cut down her mother and father and older brother, something about this child stopped him in his tracks.
Rorik paused, struggling with the swell of emotion brewing in his chest. He hadn't been there to see Danella's story play out, of course, but he couldn't help but think of his own sister, Talise, who died by the manor well house, confused and terrified, felled by a merciless Ustari blade.
This man, he couldn't bring himself to kill the little girl. He shoved her out the back and went on as if he'd never seen her. Years later, the soldier's garrison was attacked in the night, every man slaughtered in their sleep. He was the only man among them to wake up the next morning, and when he did, he found a dirty, battered corn husk doll lying on his pillow. The golden-haired girl recognized him all those years later and stopped her fellow assassins from killing him.
Rorik filled his gaze to the darkness of Zira's hood. Was it his imagination that he saw a flash of eyes in the shadows?
Maybe they'll see it as weakness and come back later to kill me, he said, then shrugged. It is what it is. Or maybe they'll remember that I spared them, and when someone else sends them to do the job, they'll spare me in turn. I'd rather give them the chance to do the right thing than take away any possibility of a choice just in case.
Her bodice moved in captivating ways when she sighed.
I can't tell whether you're insane or brilliant, she said, shaking her hood.
Rorik grinned.
I'm not sure myself most of the time, but I like to hope it's the latter.
Overhead, Macaroni woke suddenly, a low growl building in his throat.
Rorik drew his rapier.
Beside him, Zira held a trio of poisoned blades between her fingers. Moments later, a level 2 changeling sprinted into the library, eyes wild, chest heaving, narrowly averting a collision with a stack of books perched precariously on a nearby table.
Heroes, Overseer, he wheezed, doubling over to place his spidery hands on knobby knees. In the Bailey, so many heroes, including the one you instructed us to watch for, Bona Bona 007.
A raid in the early hours of the morning, when any army's defenses would be the weakest. Once again, Rorik cursed Poner Boner 007 for not being a halfwit as he shot past the changeling guard and took off down the hall. The throne room was empty, the troops deployed throughout the floor, rather than clustering the manpower in one place. Rorik vaulted up onto the dais and would have landed in the twisted obsidian throne, if not for a sudden puff of black smoke and a midnight blue shoulder knocking him aside. Rorik stumbled, arms pinwheeling, and his dexterity points were the only thing that saved him from breaking his neck in an undignified fall. He regained his balance and rounded on Zira, bewildered and more than a little annoyed.
Look!
Zira hissed, sweeping a hand toward the throne as she scanned the corners and shadows of the throne room.
It's a potent contact poison. If you touch it, you'll be killed. It's expensive. Rare. Rorik nodded his understanding as he padded forward, stopping on the dais just before the throne itself. He hunched forward a bit, eyes squinted, leathery brow furrowed. A closer inspection revealed a variegated sheen of oil, nearly invisible to the naked eye. He would be better prepared in the future now that he knew what to look for, but if not for Zira, he almost certainly would have perished. All of his progress gone in one fell swoop.
A welcoming gift from Azibek, Rorik guessed, lifting his rapier to the guard position and waiting for the attack he was sure would follow.
The hooded reaver nodded and sniffed the air.
An assassin who thinks they're very clever, she said. But they triggered the trap I put in the staircase, dropped rotting heads right down on top of them, covered themselves in rancid stink.
She crouched and took a step deeper into the shadows, disappearing in a curl of black smoke. Metal thudded into wood on Rorik's right. He spun to find Zira flicking poison knives at a gangly reaver with a wooden buckler painted with a crude skull and crossbones. The two assassins danced and flickered in and out of shadow and smoke, hurling throwing knives and iron darts at one another. Flicker, gone. Flash, they appear once more, Zira knocking aside an incoming blade with her forearm, then spinning low and left, shooting inside the assassin's guard, lashing out with a poison-tipped dagger. The hooded rogue was fast, though, blindingly so, and knocked the incoming thrust away with the flat of a short-bladed dagger. Flicker, gone again. From the corridor, Rorik heard distant shouting and the clash of metal on metal. Ponerboner 007's party had made it into the Citadel. Already the screams of the dying were echoing through the halls. Rorik cursed under his breath. He had faith in his troops. They had the weapons and armor they needed to resist the incursion, and so long as they stuck to their training, they stood a real chance of surviving. But they needed a general. They needed guidance. But he couldn't give them that guidance without accessing the damned Overseer's grimoire, and he couldn't access the grimoire because the bloody throne was poisoned. The Dungeon Lord's timing was both impeccable and dastardly. Rorik crossed the room in furious strides, Azabek's lackey in his sights. Zira fainted right, then dove into a sharp roll coming up behind the enemy reaver. Her open hand shot forward like an arrow, smashing down onto the assassin's shoulder. The assassin's red bar flashed green the moment she connected. Poisoned. Health drained away. Rorik closed with his opponent, rapier whispering through the shadow, opening a series of short but deep cuts along the sneaky bastard's upper arm. Muscles severed. The arm fell limp. The poisoned darts he'd been clutching in his hand fell to the floor. Desperate, the assassin wheeled about, bashing at Zira with his stout buckler. She moved like water, gracefully flowing out of the way as she countered. Her leather-wrapped palm slashed toward the assassin's face, but he disappeared in a puff of inky black. Gone, like a bad dream. Rorik and Zira circled warily, ready to attack at the slightest hint of movement. The assassin appeared behind Zira, an ebony blade out, and ready to launch a crippling blow, perhaps even a mortal one. Unfortunately for the assassin, he was inside Rorik's range. Rorik lunged, then thrust, Stoccata di Quarta, running the assassin right through the guts with his slim weapon. But the effect was too slow. The bastard planted his cruel dagger in Zira's kidney. Her health bar plummeted and flashed green. She whirled, a throwing dagger spinning in her palm like a top, and sliced a second gaping mouth into the assassin's neck. The assassin's health flashed critical. Then his knees promptly gave out and he dropped to the floor, dead in the span of a heartbeat. Zira didn't look so well herself, health depleted and the poison eating away at what little remained, but she'd survived the assault. Both of them had, though they had a slew of other worries yet remaining. The sounds of battle outside the throne room slammed into Rorik's mind, louder and more insistent than before. The heroes were making progress, slaughtering his troops, no doubt. He ripped his rapier free of the dead assassin and turned to Zira, desperation and adrenaline turning his voice hoarse.
I have to sit on the throne to command the troops. How do I counteract the poison?
With a wince, she ripped the dagger out of her back, regarding him coolly from the depths of her hood.
You can't. The only way to get rid of contact poison is to touch it.
She tossed the dagger aside. It clattered on the stone, its blade covered liberally with her blood.
You touch it, you die. It goes away.
There's got to be a way, Rorik snapped.
Zira sighed heavily.
I just told you what it was.
Black smoke puffed, obscuring her from view. When she stepped back into visibility, she was at the throne.
You can thank me by not finishing the job Azabek sent that assassin to do. Live, win, and kill them. All of them.
Without another word, she planted both hands flat on the seat.
Wait!
Rorik's shout died in his throat as she crumpled to the dais at the foot of the throne.
She was dead.
Icy black wrath bloomed in his gut as Rorik stalked to the throne. Azabek had done this. Another tyrant king, always another it seemed, willing to kill the innocent to get his way. Rorik pushed his righteous indignation to the back of his mind as he turned his eyes to the throne. Azabek would pay, but first he had to deal with the hero raid. First he had to deal with Poner Boner. A feral grin pulled up the corner of Rorik's lips as he noticed that the oily sheen of poison was gone, its malicious effect used up on Zira. Not a drop remained. Carefully, Rorik stepped over the dead reaver and dropped onto the throne, hands planted on the armrests as he brought up the overseer's grimoire. He couldn't let her sacrifice go to waste. She would respawn in 2 hours. In the meantime, he had a battle to win and an army to massacre. Chapter 29, Incoming. The map in the Overseer's grimoire showed the heroes' raiding party swarming down the crumbling staircase. More and more heroes flooded in by the moment. The sheer number of them was disconcerting. Poner Boner 007 certainly hadn't come short-handed this time. A worm of uncertainty wriggled inside Rorik's guts. Even with the armaments, training, and traps, he wasn't sure it would be enough. And Poner Boner 007 wouldn't stop, not until he had Rorik's head on a pike. But there was nothing he could change. Not now. All he could do was stay the course. Rorik focused on the grimoire and let out a soft sigh of relief. The creatures of the Citadel were sticking to their training. So far, so good. He watched through the magic of the Overseer's spellbook as a pair of changelings harried the heroes at the front of the antechamber with bows and arrows. The heroes gave chase, swinging heavy two-handed weapons as they followed the changelings into the hall branching toward the library. Meanwhile, reaver bats dove from the ceiling to attack archers and spellcasters, anyone with a ranged weapon. They'd taken 2 casualties from the heroes so far. A level 2 changeling guard who'd been posted at the top of the staircase, and a reaver bat in the antechamber, but none of the rest seemed to be panicking or reverting back to their lone wolf ways. Hopefully the changes would stay when the fighting intensified, which it would. Rorik selected the mass contact option, opening a one-way connection to every creature on the level.
You're doing brilliant, mates. These bastard heroes might kill us all, but we'll make them pay for every inch they take in blood. A sea of blood. We'll drown them in it. Then we'll grief their bodies for their trouble.
Just then, a group of heroes pushing into the Great Hall triggered the massive chandelier. Chains clanked, and tackles squealed as the enormous hunk of metal dropped on top of them with a clatter. One hero, an elven woman in flowing crimson robes, died on impact, but the rest were tangled in metal, chain, and one another's limbs. Sadly, no trolls seized the opportunity to overrun the occupied heroes.
Great Hall Pack, attack them!
Rorik shouted, pounding one fist against the armrest. That snapped the changelings out of their stupor. A gang of the scrawny blue trolls rushed out from behind the flipped-over tables, their claws and weapons raised, screechy battle cries rising from their throats. They swarmed the trapped heroes, tearing at them with tooth and claw as much as sword and mace. The trapped heroes began to die. A beefy human warrior in shining plate mail perished with a scream as a fine steel sword cleaved his head in 2, and one of the changelings leveled up to 4, immediately evolving into a thurser. Still more heroes fought their way in through the great room door, but the changelings were ready. They turned and scampered back, feigning a chaotic retreat, which only invited the raiders in farther. The heroes smelled weakness and intended to exploit it to their detriment.
When the heroes had overcommitted themselves, a trio of thursers, who'd been loitering in pockets of shadow, rushed in from the right flank, blocking the door with a massive, rough-hewn table that would take 5 men to budge. In one move, they cut off the heroes' combat support and their only avenue of retreat. The butchery started in earnest, and Rorik could only smile. In the throne room, the portcullis ripped open with a great screech. Kaz burst into the throne room, chest heaving, the black plumage on his headdress dancing. He pointed one of his twin hooked swords at Rorik.
Is Rorik okay?
Fine, Rorik said absently, watching the thursers clashing with the dozen segregated heroes in the great hall. From the antechamber, a mage cast a plague cloud on the trolls through the open top half of the table block doorway. Damn. The tide shifted at once, turning back in favor of the heroes as the sulfuric yellow cloud billowed at the center of the fighting. The heroes in the Great Hall seemed utterly unaffected, but the thursers and changelings choked and gasped, clawing at their throats and bulging, bleeding eyes.
Where is Zira?
Kaz asked in between panting breaths, scanning the shadows for any sign of the Reaver. Rorik gestured to the body at the foot of the dais, which Kaz had somehow missed.
Respawning. That Kerr Azebek attacked us from behind while we were fighting the heroes at our front.
Rorik held up a finger. One moment, please. And switched over to the mass telepathy.
Rogmage in purple infernal robes, near the doorway to the Great Hall. Take him down.
A moment later, a level one stone salamander dropped from the ceiling onto the mage's chest, tearing at his eyes and face with rows of jagged, needle-sharp teeth. In the Great Hall, the plague cloud had finally dissipated. Two of the changelings had died of its effects, but the thursers were now wading through the heroes, dealing out massive, crushing and slicing damage, while the remaining changelings spread out and encircled the heroes, shooting arrows and slinging spears into the fray. Another loud screech filled the throne room as Kaz lowered the portcullis, then came to take his post beside Rorik's throne, facing the shadowy doorway down to the second floor, his twin hooked swords crossed and ready for battle.
Kaz will not let anyone attack Rorik from behind,
the thurser vowed, sounding far fiercer than Rorik had ever heard before. At the edge of the cold fury in his gut, Rorik felt a twinge of gratitude, but he couldn't take his focus from the overseer's grimoire. A pair of changeling archers, who'd harried and led astray a small group of heroes, finally reached one of the dead ends. Two sticky tongues snapped down at the last moment and snatched the scrawny blue archers up to the ceiling, just as spring-loaded spears shot out of the walls, impaling the incoming heroes from both directions. The changelings and the stone salamanders dropped down and made short work of the heroes' remaining health. Along another branch of the hall, a deadly firebomb exploded, orange flames scorching the walls and char-broiling flesh. One hero, a male archer in forest green leathers, died instantly, while two more took heavy damage, their health bars dropping into the critical zone. Near the smithy, a pack of changelings were running from a trio of heroes in divine plate mail and golden robes. The changelings' nimble, misshapen blue feet leapt easily over the tripwire, but the heroes blundered right through it, oblivious to its presence. The spiked grate, so cunningly attached to the ceiling, swung free, slamming two of the heroes flat against the wall. The golden-robed mage threw up her fist, tossing off an orb of golden light that swelled and swelled, burning with the fury of a miniature sun, right until a thurser stepped out of the shadows behind the mage and crushed the hero's head like an egg with a stunning blow from his huge warhammer. Together, the thurser and the changelings went to work on the mail-wearing heroes, frantically trying to extricate themselves from the clutches of the spiked grate. In the opposite corner of the map, heroes were pushing past the great hall now, though their ranks thinned out considerably the farther into the floor they went. A group of four, half dead from their battle with the thursers and changelings in the great hall, entered the kitchen searching for trolls to massacre. There was a bloodthirsty gleam in their eyes. They wanted to kill. They wanted vengeance. They were about to be sorely disappointed instead. A level 2 spell Rorik had inscribed while still under Azebek's magic heightening blessing. If anything but a troll, bat, or salamander crosses this threshold, the air in this room will ignite, blew the heroes from their feet, and triggered the firebomb trap set up nearby. The inferno killed two outright and sent the others' health bars down under 10%. life vials strobing manically.
"Anyone left alive in the Great Hall, get to the kitchen and finish off the heroes there,"
Rorik barked. A wounded Thursar and a pair of stone salamanders raced off to carry out the order.
"Leg it, mates! The mage is healing them as we speak!"
All over the scene was the same. Infernal creatures leading heroes into traps, drawing them away from support, cutting off their retreat, and surprise attacking them from above. The creatures were taking casualties, of course, but the heroes were as well. But in spite of their valiant efforts, the raiding party was pushing deeper into the floor, though it was a slow, ponderous push, almost as if they were dazed. Clearly, they hadn't been expecting this sort of resistance from the creatures of the Citadel. Certainly not on the first level. Some small, cruel part of Rorik felt like cackling. Served them right. The whole lot of them. Just before the iron portcullis opened, Rorik caught sight of a level 5 Thursar and a level 3 changeling on the map in the corridor. The pair of them sprinted inside the throne room and spun around, weapons raised, facing whatever threat had chased them into the throne room. At Rorik's side, Kaz looked from the shadowy doorway leading downstairs to the iron portcullis, torn between defending them from the immediate threat or the insidious one that could strike without warning. A nameplate coming down the corridor caught Rorik's eye. Poner Boner OG. Strange that he'd changed his name, but the name change wasn't the only difference. The status on the hero now marked him as a level 22 high combat cleric. Poner Boner OG strode into the throne room surrounded by a small group of heroes. Rorik thought he recognized the dark elf Dude Farkowitz, now under the nameplate Gazebo Goatee, and the fire-slinging mage Junior inside a level 15 Necro Berserker. The other three, however, he didn't recognize. Poner Boner OG had also swapped the archer's leathers and bow for heavy obsidian armor that had obviously been enchanted. Broad, spiked pauldrons rose up higher than his head on either shoulder, connected by a thorny chest plate edged in pure gold. Arcs of blue and orange energy zipped along its glossy black surface. In his obsidian gauntleted fist, Poner Boner OG carried a massive mace. Its dark green handle was covered in spiny projections, and it flared into a glowing red crystal, layered and shaped like the craggy, angry petals of a malicious rose.
"Hey, dickface!"
Poner Boner OG said, smiling inside his horned obsidian helm.
"How you like my guild? Bet you thought you were just griefing some noob, but holy shit, were you wrong!"
"I suppose they're the best you could do on short notice."
Rorik slid from the throne, equipping the maple wand.
"Personally, I'm unimpressed."
"Ready to die?"
The archer turned high combat cleric growled, prowling slowly forward. Rorik nodded, but not in answer to the hero's question. A colony of reaver bats dove from the ceiling, going for the hero's eyes and faces. Long swords and axes and bolts of purple light sliced through the air, trying to fend the ferocious winged beasts off.
"Attack!" Rorik ordered.
The changeling backpedaled, firing arrows from his bow, while Kaz and a level 5 Thursar waded into the midst of the heroes as though they were trying to ford a river made of flesh and steel. A crack of lightning erupted from Poner Boner OG's rose mace, filling the throne room with blinding light, followed by ear-hammering thunder. With a screech, a pair of reaver bats fell from the air dead. Poner Boner OG raised his mace again and shouted in a language Rorik didn't know. A ring of blue light flared around the heroes. Gazebo Goatee in his shining divine plate mail, the Necro Berserker, and the rest of the heroes doubled in size, amplified muscles bulging and pulsing. A strength spell of some sort.
"Take out the tanks first,"
Poner Boner OG ordered his warriors.
"I got the archer. And no one touch that dickweed griefer. That little asshole is mine."
Rorik darted into the fray, casting increased speed on Kaz, another of the level 2 spells he'd inscribed earlier under Azabek's magic-enhancing blessing, then ducked back out of range before a hero could take his head off. The spell granted Kaz a 45% movement bonus for 45 seconds. Kaz became a blur, his hooked blades flashing between a muscle-bound hulk of an Olm and a green-robed elf wielding a delicate-looking bastard sword. Then,
While Rorik still had the health to spare, he cast spectral hands on Gazebo Goatee. Precious red drained out of his filigreed vial, and a garden of ghostly blue arms grew up out of the stone floor, snatching the dark elf's ankles, arms, armor, anything they could grab, and held him in place for the level 5 Thurser. Another crack of thunder shook